wanted to talk a little bit about Kovna. There were very prominent Rabbanim in Kovna. I teach at Yeshiva University, for those who don't know. So Yeshiva originally was a combination of two different yeshivas. The people who came from Lithuania founded a yeshiva on the Lower East Side that was called Yeshiva Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim was the name of the Volozhin yeshiva that was founded by Rabbi Chaim Volozhin. Then Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan was the rabbi in Kovna, and he passed away in 1896. So the Russian Balabatim, who lived on the Lower East Side, put together nickels and dimes and quarters, the merchants, and they founded the yeshiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. Within the year after the Ptira of Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, they founded yeshiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. Then the two combined together. So they still have Amli Emblem, it still has the symbol of Eitz Chaim, and Yeshiva Zabani Yitzchak Chanan. Yitzchak Chanan was known as he was rabbi first in smaller villages, and then he became well known. The story goes, Rav Soloveitchik used to like telling over the story. It used to be beggars who used to travel from one city to the other, itinerant beggars. They would schnorre money wherever they went. They would sleep in the Hegdish. Every community had a room next to the shul where the beggars would sleep. So one of the beggars was once in Zavalin. That's one of the cities where Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan was a rabbi before he came to Kovna, a few positions before. So this beggar told the rabbi, you never become anybody important until you get smicha from a Biancala Karlina. Yankov of Karlina was the rabbi in Karlin, and he was a Talmud of Rab Chaim Volozhin, from the early Talmidim of Volozhin Yeshiva. He used to go, it was known, he used to go visit Volozhin Yeshiva every year. Rab Chaim Volozhin would be mechabed him to give his shir. And he wrote major svarim, Shavas HaTshuvas, that are called Mishkanas Yankov. He, of course, was a misnagid. The whole Volozhin Yeshiva was all misnagdim. It was founded by Rab Chaim Volozhin, was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, who was the main opponent of Hasidus at that time. So he was a Misnagan, and he lived in the city Karlin. He lived with the Karlin Hasidim, with the Stalin Hasidim. Karlin and Stalin are twin cities. I think if you walk 5 minutes, you go from one city to the other, like Teaneck and Bergenfield. One blends into the other. So he has, in his farm, he has a lot of tshuvas where he disagrees with the Hasidim on different issues. He has the famous tshuva where he disagrees with the Hasidim about the Hasidim would insist on buying Dafka a green esrik. And it's based on a passage in the Zohar. And he says that it's a misunderstanding of the Zohar. The word yarok in modern Hebrew means green. But in Talmudic Hebrew, the word yarok could be yellow or brown or any color. It could be green also, any shade of a color. So the Zohar says that the esrik should be yarok. So the Mishkanes Yankim said it does mean green. Yorek Hakarsi is green, but Yorok means yellow, so the Esrik should be yellow. As other tshuvas also where he disagrees with the Hasidim on different things. So he was a major Pesach. He was one of the very big rabbis in Lithuania, in Karlin, in Stalin Karlin. So this beggar made a comment to the Rav, to Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, he was a rabbi in Zavalin, that you never become anybody big until you go get smicha for Rabbi Yankel Karlin. It went into his head, and he decided he's going to go travel to Karlin. So he went to Karlin. The way Rabbi Soloveitchik tells over the story is not exactly the way it says it in the history books. The way he told over the story, he came to Karlin and at night, and he went to the Beis Medrash. He didn't have any place to sleep, so he slept in the Beis Medrash. And he found the Gemara Zvachim there. And that was the first time in his life that he ever saw a Gemara Zvachim. It wasn't so common. When Rav Chaim Volozhin founded the Volozhin Yeshiva, he sent out a kol kari, sent out letters to all the Jewish communities, please donate gemaras. We need gemaras. They didn't have, it wasn't so common that every Beis Medrash had a set of gemaras. I remember at the funeral of Rav Henkin, one of the Rabbanim who delivered a hesped, that was a long time ago, one of the Rabbanim delivered a hesped, he said, why was Rav Henkin such an expert on Erevin? It was Yadua, he was an expert in Erevin. So he said, as a teenager, he asked his father, he'd like to go learn in Volozhin. So the father said, I don't have enough money to pay for the transportation to get to Volozhin. So he said, give me whatever money you have and I'll take the public transportation, whatever. And then the rest of the day I'll hitch a ride with someone who's going anyway. So the father agreed, So he took the money, he went half the way. Then it started to snow and he couldn't hitch a ride. And he never reached Volozhin. He got stuck in a little village. There was only a Gemara Erevin. There were no other Gemaras there. So the boy was a teenager, was all by himself. He learned Erevin 14 times in 1 year, from cover to cover. So that's why he knew Erevin very well. So at that time also, the Gemaras were not so available. So Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan was a rabbi. He was writing tshuvas already, and he never saw a Gemara Zvachim. So that night when he arrived in Karlin, he was so excited. He saw a Gemara Zvachim for the first time in his life. So he started learning the Zvachim, the first page, the second page, then he fell asleep. Then in the morning, he davened Shacharis. He had taken his talis until davened Shacharis in shul. Right after Shacharis, there was a debate, there was a discussion among the Rabbanim, the Dayanim, Rabbi Yankala Karlina, with the Dayan in the city. There was a debate about a get. The din is that a get has to be written in the Shema. So Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan had just the night before learned the first page in Gemara Zvachim, where it talks a little bit there about shechting karbonis lishma and writing a get lishma. So he mentioned when the rabbanim were debating the shaila about the get being written lishma, he mentioned something that it says in the Tosfos on the first daf in Zvachim. So the rabbanim was so taken by that. Ah, this guy knows Zvachim. Wow. It was the first time in his life that he ever saw Gemara Zvachim. So they started talking to him and learning, and they saw that he knew everything else also, because all the other Gemaras he had seen, and he knew Shulchan Aruch very well. So Rabbi Yankala Karlina gave him smicha, and that soon, I think the same day or the next day, a community sent a message to Rabbi Yankala Karlina that they need a rabbi, can he recommend someone? So he recommended Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan should go. And then a few times, I think two or three rabbanos later, he was offered the position to come to Kovna. To be Kovna was a big city. He was really a prominent rabbi. When he was a rabbi in Kovna, they sent them shilas from all over the world, from America, from Australia, from all over the world. The Jews sent them shilas. He was known as a very big masmid. They write that his strongest mesichta was Bava Metzia. And they write this, I didn't realize on my own, I didn't read enough tshuvas by Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan to realize. They say that Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan's best mesichta is Bava Metzia. So whenever he would write a tshuva, he would always see to it that he would quote a Tosfos from Bava Metzia to prove a certain point. Because that was his favorite mesichta. He was accepted by everybody. Chassidim and the Misnagdim and the Maskilim, and everybody respected him, and the Goyim and the government. Everybody respected him. He had the old Derech HaLimud. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik changed everything. Now we live in a different world, but he had the old Derech HaLimud. So there's a famous story about Rav Chaim Soloveitchik once had a shaila in Halacha. So he sent a shaila to Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, and he asked him, please send me a telegram what the din is, Asur Amuta, and don't give me a whole explanation. Is going to give me a whole explanation, I may not agree with your explanation. Because Rav Chaim had a different style of arriving at conclusions. But he assumed that Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan was a holy tzaddik, and in Hashemayim, they wouldn't allow him to make a mistake. But so he was prepared to accept the psak of Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, but he recommended, don't give me a whole tshuva, don't give me the whole explanation why you came to that conclusion. In the first volume of tshuvas that he printed, he has over 70 shilas, it's on Ebenezer, has over 70 shilas of agunas. There were a lot of wars and tragedies. Ships sank and so on, so there are many different shilas of agunas. So he was makel in all of the 70 plus shilas, except for one. He was machma in one case. He's known for the heter agunas. He's known for being coming up with kulas to be mater agunas. One of his famous kulas, he wasn't the originator of this kula, but he made it more mefursam, is the kula of Trey Rube. The Gemara has a din, if a man drowns, if you have a dead body and you identify the body, say no, the wife is permitted to remarry. If someone drowned in the ocean, someone drowned in a lake, and you don't have the dead body. You just know that he fell in and he never came out. And he waited there half an hour. A guy can't live under the water so long, can't hold your breath for so long. So then you assume that the guy's dead. So there's a chumer midrabbanan, if he drowned in a mayim she'en lahem sof, if he drowned in a little lake, you can see all the edges of the pond or of the lake, you just can't find the dead body. So then you assume that the fellow is dead. But if he drowned in the ocean, or drowned in a river, and you can't see all the edges of the river, it goes further past your eyesight. So then there's a chumra midrabbanan. You know, I know, we all know that the man is dead. And the Gemara tells a case that someone drowned and they swore the poor man, Mr. Chasa, was eaten up by the fish. Achluhu kavrei lechasa. The fish ate up poor Mr. Chasa, he's dead. But there's a chumra midrabbanan that the wife is not allowed to remarry because there's a far-fetched, far-out possibility that maybe he swam under the water till past our eyesight. Maybe came up because one out of a million cases happened like that. So they made a chumer in the rabbah. So the mafarshim and the gemara say, the achrayim write in the tshuvas, the gemara didn't really mean to make a chumer in the rabbanim. The gemara meant the rabbanim should have to work harder to come up with a kula, come up with a heter. So one of the heterim that they came up with years before Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan was, if you have a double roiv. The one rive is that people who drown and don't come up out of the ocean after a half an hour are dead. But what if you have another rive, for example? So the Svarim give, let's say like this. Someone was, let's say the river was iced over. Sometimes the lake turns into ice in the wintertime. And you can have an automobile driving on top of the ice and it's not going to fall in. So let's say someone was, a man was walking on a bridge. And he fell off of the bridge, and he fell down, and he cracked his head on the ice. And the ice was basically very strong ice. So if a person falls 10 flights and he hits his, he gets a brain concussion, hits his head on the ice, he'll probably die because of that fall. And then, in addition to that, the right is that he probably died. And then it cracked a hole in the ice, and the body went below the ice, and you can't retrieve the body. So that's an example of a trei rubei. The first rive is he probably died because of the impact when he fell down. And then the second rive is that he drowned under the water, so he probably died because of the drowning. Or let's say an airplane explodes, there's a bomb on an airplane and explodes in the air. So most of the people will be killed because of the explosion on the airplane. Then the airplane goes into the ocean or crashes on the ground. So that's another rive, that when someone drowns in the ocean, he dies. Or when the airplane crashes on the ground, all the people are going to die. So whenever you have a double roiv, so with Mako. So this is famous in Mishkan as Yankiv, Paskin like that, because he remembered the Rav Chaim Volozhin at Paskin like that. So this is more famous from Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. He used that kula a lot to be Mako on Agunis. He's known in 1868. He mentioned yesterday that Rav Hillman was the chief dayan in London for a period of time, and there was a Shnas Batzoris that he called a conference of all the Rabbanim of Ireland and England to be Mekel on Kitnia. So the same was in 1868, there was also a Shnas Batzoris, and it's done that Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan was Mekel. He told all the people they can eat Kitnias that Pesach because there wasn't enough flour to bake enough matzah, so they had no brera, they had to. There's a famous story also. One of the Rabbanim in one of the communities gave a psak, and he realized they made a mistake. And he got up in public and he said he was intellectually honest. And he said that he reversed the psak and said he made a mistake. So the Balabatim was so upset. What kind of a rabbi is this? The rabbi is supposed to know how to learn. He made a mistake. So Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan heard about it, that they were being mevaza their rabbi. So he sent them a letter, and he wrote in the letter that the first letter that I sent you answering your shaila was incorrect. I made a mistake, and the correct halacha is like this. The rabbi never sent him any letter, but he wanted the rabbi to be able to show the Balabatim that even he makes mistakes. So the rabbi was clear. He was very considerate. He was a big Bal Musa. Everybody was very respectful of him. after he passed away in 1896, then within the year they founded the Shiras of Yitzchak Yochanan in New York. So remember when the chief rabbi Levine, chief rabbi of Moscow, visited America many years ago, over 50 years ago, I think. So he visited the Yeshiva University. So they had a mesiba in his honor, and Dr. Belkin spoke on the occasion. Dr. Belkin was the president of the Yeshiva at that time. So he spoke in Yiddish, so he said to Rabbi Levine, go back to Russia and tell the Balabatim that you saw the biggest Russian yeshiva in the whole wide world. Said, this yeshiva was founded by the Russian peddlers who put together their nickels and their quarters and they made our yeshiva on the east side. So he said, go back and tell me you saw the biggest Russian yeshiva in the world. So after Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan passed away, 1896, then Rabbi Chaim Moiser became the big person. Then they started sending all the shadows to Rabbi Chaim Moiser. He lived in Vilna at that time. But Kol Zman, Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan was alive. He was known as the big person. Rabbi Chaim Moiser was a dayan before Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan passed away also. He became a dayan when he married his wife. His father-in-law was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Salantin. He was a dayan in Vilna. So when the father-in-law passed away, they appointed Rabbi Chaim Moiser as a dayan. So he wrote tshuvas while Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan was still alive. In one of the tshuvas of Rabbi Chaim Moiser, he writes that he corresponded with Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan on the shaila, and he was masking with him also to be Megel. In Kovna and in Vilna, these were two major cities in the 1800s, where there were big Talmid HaChacham and a lot of Talmidim learning Torah. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the founder of the Musa movement. So he spent a lot of time in Vilna, a lot of time in Kovna as well. So when he started the whole Musa movement, it was big opposition. Many Rabbanim were opposed. What do you need a new Musa movement? You learn the Torah. The Torah tells you how to act. What are you coming up with a new style of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter? The whole motivation to found the Musa movement was to fight the Maskilim. Maskilim were making fun of the whole Jewish religion and all the Jewish style of living. And the Bali Musa wanted to preserve Yiddishkeit. So they wanted to show that the Jewish religion has something special, how to act like a real mensch. That was the whole motivation. It was one of the major motivations in the movement. It was to fight the Haskalah. But nonetheless, there was much opposition. And Rabbi Dov Katz, who wrote the five-volume set about Tenuas HaMusar, wrote another that was reprinted many times. That's available in all the bookstores. So he wrote another book about the Pulnus HaMusa, about the big debate, about the big machloikas. That he once published, and he never reprinted it. He just felt that he has to record it for posterity to write it. And then he felt that he himself belonged to the Musa movement, Rav Dov Katz. His son, Rav Yaakov Katz, is a Magid Shir in Eretz Yisrael, a popular Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. He's in Shiva HaKotel for many years. He used to give a weekly Shir in the Beis HaKnesses Yeshura to the Balabatim, a daily Shir, I think. Daf Yomi, a daily Shir. So this Rav Dov Katz wrote this book about the Pulmas HaMusa. So in Slabodka, there were two different yeshivas. One yeshiva had Musa, the other yeshiva did not have Musa. One was called Knesset Beis Yitzchak. That was named after Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan, after he passed away in 1896. So they named the Musa Yeshiva Knesset Beis Yitzchak. And then the other one was called Knesset Beis Yisrael. But the old Pulmas HaMusa is no longer relevant. I mentioned yesterday, Rav Soloveitchik wrote,
Knesset Yitzchak was anti-Musa.
What?
Knesset Yitzchak was anti-Musa.
Who, Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan?
Yeah.
Oh, he was the anti-Musa?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought he was for the Musa. I thought they named the...
No, Knesset Yisrael is Yisrael Salanter.
Ah. The Knesset Yisrael was named after Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. That was the Musa Yeshiva.
Yeah.
Knesset Beis Yitzchak was against. Okay. I mixed it up. Thank you. Now the whole thing is irrelevant.
Double check.
Now the whole thing is irrelevant.
We're going to continue now.
Yeah.
Now they're going to drop this rabbi.
Good.
Made a mistake.
You just learned that to be rude to the teacher.
Yes.
You just were talking about it.
Good. Thank you.
The Ritz Kochanan made a mistake, you made a mistake.
In the late 1800s, the Radzina Rebbe wanted to hasten the coming of Mashiach. So he said, if Mashiach is going to come, you have to make a Beis HaMikdash, you have to make Big Day Kuhuna. Without Big Day Kuhuna, the Kohanim can't, without wearing the special uniforms, they're not permitted to do the Hakrovus HaKarbonis. And some of the Big Day Kuhuna require Tchelas. The Tchelas has to be from a special Chalazon. And we already lost the tradition, what the Chalazon is, for many, many centuries. It was lost already in the days of the Gaonim, in the days of the Gemara. They still had Tchelas, days of the Amoraim, and then in the next few hundred years, the Chalazon somehow disappeared. So the Radzina Rebbe wanted to prepare for the coming of Mashiach. He traveled to Italy, he heard there's a big aquarium there, and he studied all the different fish, and he decided that there must be the squid fish. Right? And before the Second World War, there were tens of thousands of Hasidim in Europe, not only Radzina Hasidim. Tens of thousands of others, Radzina Zodgeret, and many others who would be wearing trailers in their tzitzis. But now it's assumed that he made a mistake and it's not at all a squid fish. It's a totally different sea animal. So when he came up with his chiddush, so different rabbanim corresponded with him. So the Radzina Rebbe put out three svarim. Now they print all the three together in one volume. They call it Shlosha Sifrei HaTchelas. So the third sefer was a collection of the correspondence that he had with other rabbanim of his generation. So one of the letters is from Rabbi Yitzchak Chana. So Rabbi Yitzchak Chana writes to him, "I would go along with you. I think you're right. I would go along with you and wear the Tchelas. But if I'm going to start wearing Tchelas, everybody will laugh at me, and I'm in the middle of waging a battle with the maskilim. He's fighting against the maskilim. If he's going to wear tchelas, he'll lose his credibility. Everybody will think that he's a meshuganim. So that's why he writes he can't wear tchelas." I was very surprised about this. What do you mean? You have a political reason why you're not going to do a mitzvah? If the Torah says you have to wear tchelas, if you think that this is the correct tchelas, you should do it. What do you mean for political reasons you're not going to wear tchelas? So they say that Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan said on another occasion, they quote this in the history books, he said on another occasion, he's so into his milchama, he's waging battle against the maskilim, he feels that it's even permissible for him to be Mechalel Shabbos, to disagree with the maskilim. He held that it's a p'china of saving the whole Jewish religion. So if you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos, you're certainly allowed to be Mevatel Mitzvah of Tchelis as well. But I thought it's a very strange attitude. You're waging a battle, political fight against the maskilim. There are a lot of imachal shabbos, a lot of violent mitzvahs in the Torah. Anyway, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan was accepted by everybody, and he carried weight by the government also. They respected him. The goyish ministers and the government all respected him. People have forgotten already about Rabbi Yitzchak Salanter. During his lifetime, he was, aside from the fact that he was the founder of the Muslim movement, he was one of the greatest Gaonim of the generation. He's a very big accomplished Talmid Chacham. It was, of course, the old Derech Halim. The story goes that he met Rav Chaim Soloveitchik when Rav Chaim was a teenager, and he spoke to him in learning a little bit, and he said that he thinks this new style of learning that Rav Chaim was developing as a young man is going to save Torah learning for the future generations, because people's minds think differently in different generations. The old style of learning is not going to sell well in the new generation. So Salanter himself is very famous for his learning. There is a story that was written up in all of the newspapers at the time. It could be that it was reported incorrectly, that there was a cholera epidemic. Rav Yitzchak Salanter spent a lot of time in Vilna, a lot of time in Kovna, different times. Then he felt that he traveled to Paris and to Berlin, because he realized the university students were going to lose their the Jewish identity. So he didn't speak French, but he organized shiurim there in Paris. And in Berlin, he wanted everybody to remain Jewish. But there's a famous story that was written up in all the newspapers once, a cholera epidemic in Vilna. And on Yom Kippur, there was a shiloh whether the people should fast or not, because there was a sofek sakonis nefashos. So supposedly, the story goes, Rabbi Saul Salanter there were big dayanim in Vilna, the late 1800s, and Rabbi Tzal of Vilna, Rabbi Shlaimel of Vilna, they had big dayanim. So supposedly, the story goes, Rabbi Saul Salanter was upset about the fact that the dayanim felt you have to judge each person individually. He felt that it was such a sofek sakana. So he went up on the bima after shachris, and he made kiddush in public, and he had some cake, and he said everybody should eat. Right? Everybody has to eat because of the sofek sakana. So this is the way it was written up in all the newspapers at the time. One of the maskilim, I forgot his name right now. One of the maskilim wrote a book in Yiddish about the different gedolim that he knew. And he was, this Moscow was religious, but he was the gabbai in the community of Libau, which I think was a resort area on the Baltic Sea. So many rabbanim used to spend a week or two in the summertime in this community. So he has a chapter about Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik and about the Rashash, about different people. So he writes that he met the Rashash. And the Rashash told him that the whole story is not true, that he was there in Vilna as a child. Rabbi Saul Salanter was there on that Yom Kippur. Rabbi Saul Salanter said that they should eat pachas pachas megashir. Not that he made kiddush, he didn't say kiddush. He was healthy and he didn't eat at all. He just announced in public that everyone should, anyone who thinks that he may be coming down with cholera, should make sure that he makes kiddush and that he eats something to remain healthy. We mentioned yesterday, we saw Salanter had many followers when he found that the Musa movement, he himself picked this up from Zundel Salant. Zundel Salant was a tzaddik who had learned the Valojan Yeshiva, who picked the Valojan from Rabbi Chaim Valojan in the early years of Valojan Yeshiva. Rabbi Saul Salanter picked everything up from him, the whole Musa, the whole idea. And his three most outstanding talmidim were Rav Naftali Amsterdam and Rav Yitzchak Glaser, Rav Simcha Zisel Ziv, the one who founded the Grois Talmud Torah in Kelem. The author of the Sri Deish, Michiel Yaakov Weinberg, who passed away 50 years ago, is one of the most outstanding talmidim learning in Slobodka. He was very much into the Musa. Later on in life, he was had a rabbanis in Poland. Later on in life, he went to Berlin and he gave the highest shiur in Hildesheimer Seminary. But in the early years, he was very much into the Musa movement. He was the one who started writing essays about the major figures in the Musa movement. And Rav Dov Katz, who wrote the five volumes about the Musa Musa, was really a takeoff on what the Sri Deish had begun. So the Sri Deish, when he was into what he was learning, he was so into learning, he would forget about everything else. He didn't know anything else that was going on. They say, I think that when he was into learning, he would eat an egg. Sometimes he would forget to remove the shell on the egg and just eat the whole egg, a hard-boiled egg. He was so thinking and learning. So when he learned in Slobodka, the Alter from Slobodka set him up to learn the Chavrusa with Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who was much older than him, who was one of the three most outstanding students of Rabbi Saul Salanter. They used to learn together every Matzoi Shabbos. They used to learn together Ktzoi Sachosh. So on one occasion, he asked Rav Naftali, what should I do? I sometimes have a forgetfulness. I forgot to peel the egg, take off the shell. So he says, sometimes I forget. So he said, what do you mean? What do you forget? What's the problem? So he says, sometimes I forget, so involved in learning, I forget to daven mincha. And that's what he said, that's what he meant. So Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam said, what do you mean? You don't daven mincha? Or you don't daven mitzibur? So he was embarrassed to say that he sometimes forgets the daven mincha. So he told a lie and he says, no, daven mincha. Well, sometimes I get so engrossed in learning, I forget to go to shul and I have to daven b'yichidus. So they start to tell him mitzvahs, what he should do. And later on, Rav Weinberg felt guilty. As a bacher, he felt guilty. Why did he tell him a lie? So he went to the altar from Slabodka, who had set him up with the chavrusa, with Rav Naftali Amsterdam. And he told him that he told Rav Naftali a lie. So the altar told him, you have to go back to Rav Naftali's home and tell him the truth. Tell him that you told him a lie, and tell him that sometimes you forget the daven mincha. So he was so embarrassed, he was so humiliated by this. So he was walking. Apparently Rav Naftali lived about an hour's walk away from where the yeshiva was. They were together on Shabbos, but the rest of the week he lived a far walk away. So Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg was walking. He was so humiliated. He was preparing himself that he's going to have to reveal to Rav Naftali that he told him a lie, that he really forgets the Dam Mincha. So as he was about to walk into Rav Naftali's home, another bacher from the yeshiva comes up to him and he says, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Alter from Slabodka, told me that you shouldn't go into Rav Naftali. So he said, what do you mean? But he sent me to go speak to him. So he said, no, he changed his mind. He canceled it. Don't go in to speak to him. So he didn't know what happened. So he went back to the yeshiva. So the Alter told him, it's enough that you were walking there for an hour and you were thinking over in your mind what you're going to have to say, how you're going to have to humiliate yourself. So that's an upside. I'm sure you're never going to tell a lie again in your life. He used to, the Alter from Slabodka had different ways to train different people. So this was his way of training Weinberg, of being an Isha Emes. The Muslim movement was a tremendous movement in Europe. For many years now, everything is all watered down. There were different styles of Muslim. Now everything is basically the same. He told over the story that because it's already the 50th Yahrzeit this year.
Yechiel Weinberg?
What?
Yechiel Weinberg.
Yeah. So because it was the 50th Yahrzeit, so in Israeli newspapers they wrote over a lot of stories. They interviewed one of the people from Switzerland who now lives in Eretz Israel, who was very close to him. Because after the war, Yechiel Weinberg was in Berlin in the Hildesheim Seminary when the war broke out. And then after they kept him in a special place, he wasn't sent to concentration camp, they kept him in a special place, and he didn't hear anything for a few years. He didn't hear anything that was going on during the war. He didn't hear that everybody was killed and so on. So after the war was all over and he was liberated, so they asked him, where do you want to go? So he said he wants to go to Warsaw. So they told him, there is no Warsaw. Warsaw was destroyed and everybody was killed and the yeshivas. So he collapsed. He had a nervous breakdown. And one of the Talmidim who had learned in Hildesheim Seminary, who then lived in Switzerland, heard that the Rebbe was very sick. He wasn't healthy at all. So he went and he picked him up and he took him to his home in Switzerland. He tried to nurse him back to reasonable health. So that person who tried to take care of his Rebbe, his name is Weingart. So he passed away soon after, so I think a year after. And he had a wife and children, so the Sridi Age Weinberg lived nearby, and he was like a father to the children. So this fellow who was interviewed now, on the 50th Yahrzeit, he was the child who became Bar Mitzvah after his father died. And I think after the father died, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg was like his father. When he was Bar Mitzvah, so other people were buying him Svarim, and he, Rabbi Chil Weinberg, bought him a bicycle. He said, this Svarim he'll get later. Now he needs a bicycle. He's a child, now he needs a bicycle. So he said over a lot of Zichronos, they interviewed him in the newspaper, he said over a lot of Zichronos, they told over this whole story about the way the Alter von Slabodka told me he has to go apologize that he told the lie to Rav Naftali. Then he sent the Bachet to chase after him that he shouldn't go in, he shouldn't humiliate himself. Before the Second World War, there was a prominent, the rabbi in Kovna was also a prominent Talmid Chacham. He wrote the Shana Sechuvah's Dvar Avraham. There are three volumes. The two volumes were printed during the lifetime of the author. His name is Rabbi Avraham Dovber Kahana Shapiro. He was a descendant from Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner. In Lithuania, that was considered the big Yichus. to be me Beis Harav. Beis Harav means a descendant from Rav Chaim Elojanim. Descendant from the Vilna Gaon was not the big Yichus. That's the question, why? Descendant from Rav Chaim Elojanim, that was the big thing. Vilna Gaon had descendants who were Machal Le Shabbos. But somehow Rav Chaim Elojanim's descendants were considered more important. By the Hasidim, they say the reason why is because Rav Chaim Elojanim refused to sign the Cherem. The Vilna Gaon wrote a Cherem against the Hasidim, and they say Rav Chaim Elojanim's name doesn't appear on the Cherem. So he refused to sign it. They tell the story that when the Shliach came to Rav Chaim Elojanim with the Cherem written by the Vilna Gaon, and he said he wants the Rav Chaim Elojanim to sign it, so he said, if the Vilna Gaon would be here in person and tell me to sign, that's one thing. But the Shliach tells me, not Mechuyev to sign. So he said, when the Rabbanu Shel Olam came, appeared to Avraham Avinu, and he told him, Kachnas Mincha Zichitcha Va'aleh Sham Le'ayla, the Rabbanu Shel Olam appeared to him, and he said, offer your son as a carbon, so Avraham Avinu listened. Then to save his son, the Malach appeared, and he said, Pantush Al Yad Chalanar, not to kill his son. So the Malach tells you, listen, but if the Malach would have appeared to him originally and told him Kachnas Mincha, he would not have listened. So that's what they claim. Rav Chaim Elojanim said, if the Vilna Gaon would tell me in person to sign it, that's one thing I would sign. But the Vilna Gaon is not here, so I'm not mechuyev to listen to the Shliach to sign. So by the Hasidim they say that that's why it turned out that the big Yichus in Lithuania was, those were descendants of Rav Chaim Elojanim, and they were called Beis Harav. And descendants of the Vilna Gaon were not, because Rav Chaim Elojanim refused to sign the Cherem on the Hasidim. And then yesterday there was a Rabbi Yossi Buchsbaum, did a lot of historical research for the Machon Yerushalayim, for the publishing house in Yerushalayim. He used to do all the historical, he wrote the introductions to a lot of these works. So he made a comment. He saw the original copy of the Cherem, and he knew Rav Chaim Elojanim's handwriting. He said, the whole Cherem is written by in Rav Chaim Elojanim's handwriting. He said, he doesn't understand what that means. Rav Chaim Elojanim refused to sign it. He was the one who wrote the text of the Cherem. Anyway, but so before the last rabbi in Kovna, who died in the Kovna ghetto, before the Nazis had a chance to kill him and to kill all the others, well, this rabbi, Duber Kahana Shapira, and his sefer is called Dvar Avram. He himself learned in Volozhin, and he writes in his sefer, he learned by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He already had the new style of learning, new Derech HaLimud. And you can tell from the way he writes tshuvas. He writes, it's a different style of a tshuva, with the new Derech HaLimud. But it's interesting, much of his svarim are not halacha lemaisa, much is on kachim and on egla rufa and on esoteric topics, the yeshivish topics, kam lebidirak minei, and other topics, not so much. A few tshuvas are halacha lemaisa, how to spell a name and a get, and a couple of heteragunas he has, but much of what he wrote is not halacha lemaisa. He has one tshuva that is halacha lemaisa, a very major tshuva. To what extent do you apply the rule of dina de malchusa dina? So he divides it into different areas. He says there's one area is minting coins. Sometimes halacha insists that you need davke kesef. For example, if you have maaser sheni, you have to be paid the maaser sheni davke on kesef. You cannot be paid the maaser sheni on Shavu Kesef. When we get married, all those who are married, so you give the girl Shavu Kesef. You give a ring. That's not Kesef, that's Shavu Kesef. Many gives you Dafke give Shavu Kesef. You don't give Kesef. We want to demonstrate that this, the whole Kiddushe Kesef is Torah Shabbal Peh. That's why the Karaites never had Kiddushe Kesef. So the Rambam writes that Kiddushe Shtar is Torah Shabbichsav. Kiddushe Kesef is only known through Torah Shabbal Peh. So the Rambam implies that because the Karaites never accepted Kiddushi Kesef, there are three groups of Karoi. There are Karaites from Europe, from Asia, from Africa. Each group has different shtick. But one of the Tzarashavash of the Kulam, one of the things that all three have in common is none of them have Kiddushi Kesef, because that's only Torah Shabbal Peh. The Karoi only follow Mikro, they only follow Torah Shabbosa. So the Rambam implies that because Kiddushi Kesef is Torah Shabbal Peh, that's why Klal Yisrael, the Orthodox Jews, have chosen to be Mekadosh Davke with Kesef, to demonstrate that we do subscribe to the Torah Shabbal Peh. And then we not only Kesef, we do Shavu Kesef. We give a ring. Shavu Kesef is Torah Shabbal Peh on top of Torah Shabbal Peh. But sometimes the Halacha says there are three dinim where Shavu Kesef is not acceptable. So one of the three cases, the most famous case, is that when you want to be poidim, I say sheni, you have to use davki kesef, you have to use kesh. So that depends on legal tender. Whatever the government recognizes as legal tender is considered kesef. So that depends on dina de machusa. Then there's halacha dina de machusa, the right of the government to collect taxes. Then there's dina de machusa, they have a right to punish people who violate the laws of the government. Then there are other aspects to dina de machusa. They set up a whole system, a legal system, but that's only binding when one of the parties involved is a nochri. When all the parties involved are Yehudim, then we don't apply dina de machusa, then we apply chashim mishpat. A lot of difference. The Dvar Avraham has a very famous fundamental shul, a very important shul, where he divides the different areas of Dina de Machusa, when it does apply by, when the Dina Machusa of the Goyish government applies for the Yisraelim and when not. He's also famous, he has a tshuva which we don't follow, we then generally do not follow. But he has a whole argument in the first volume of his tshuvas, had a whole argument. If the moel, the local moel, has to perform two brisin on the same day, one bris is a mila bismana. The baby was born last Friday, so the bris is today on Friday. It's a mila bismana. So strictly speaking, the Gemara says you can do the bris any time in the daytime until 10 o'clock. When is the shkia? 10 o'clock today. The zricha is 4:45 or something. The shkia is 10 o'clock. So strictly speaking, you can do the bris all day long. But Zviz Magdim la Mitzvah, more proper is, it's a Hida Mitzvah to do it earlier in the day. What if you have a Mila Shalai Bismana? A baby was born a month ago and he wasn't healthy. And the doctor said you have to postpone the bris till he gains a little weight, till he gets a little healthier. So then it's a Mila Shalai Bismana. So then the Dvar Avraham says you don't have all day long. Then you have to do the bris the first available opportunity, the first minute. You don't say just reason my dimulamits. If you wait till tomorrow, or if you wait till later today, you can really, the baby is healthy now, you can do the bris now, then it's considered as if you're in violation of the mitzvah, as if you are mavatla mitzvah, even though ultimately you will perform the bris. So you came up with this gewaldige chiddush, that if the moel, the local moel, has to do two brisen on the same day, one is a milu bismana, one is a milu shalai bismana, so you should perform the milu shalai bismana first. Because the mila bismana he has all day long is just a zrizus. It's a hider, a zrizus makdim la mitzvah to do it earlier. But if it's a mila that was postponed already and it's done on the wrong day, after the Yom HaShmini, then every minute counts and you're not allowed to postpone till later. I remember there was one situation, one of the young married men in the yeshiva, learning in the kollel, had a baby boy and the doctor said you have to postpone the bris. Then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the doctor said, okay, everything's fine, you can do the bris now. So he had the bris right away, even though there was no caterer. He said, don't worry about the meal later. The Avraham says, you have to rush right away. So this is a famous tshuva that he has in the first volume. In the second volume, he has four or five rabbonim corresponded with him, and they disagreed. And he quotes their letters, and he writes, he has his correspondence, he disagreed with them. They quote from the Chazon Ish that the minig is not like the Dvar Avraham. Even though it's a very sharp argument, the minig is not like the Dvar Avraham. Much of the essays that he wrote are really not halacha lamai. Many of the essays are in Kochim, in Tvilah and Mikveh, Taris, really, not issues halacha lamai. But he was a prominent Talmud Chacham. He's also famous. He's the one who gave smicha to Rabbi Soloveitchik. By Joseph Soloveitchik, when he came to America, originally came to America, he had a visa to go to Skokie Yeshiva to teach there in the yeshiva, to be a Rebbe in the Skokie Yeshiva. Then when he arrived in America, they notified him that they have no money, and they can't pay him. So he needed a parnasa. So he somehow, they said, if you go to Boston, they'll appoint him as the Rav HaIr in Boston. So they said, what smicha do you have? He didn't have any smicha. So he needed smicha. So they sent a telegram to the Dvar Avraham, who is a relative, because they were also, the Soloveitchik family is also the Beis HaRav, they're also descendants of Rav Chaim Volozhin. So he sent a famous telegram. He wrote about Rabbi Soloveitchik, Yari Yari Yad Nahalacha Kamasa Luchamaka. He knows how to pass the shot. So based on that telegram, they say he was the first person that got a smicha by telegram. So based on that telegram that his relative gave him smicha, so that's why they accepted him as the Rav HaIr in in Boston. Most of the tshuvas that he writes to whom he's with whom he's corresponding. Like, for example, one of the letters that he included in the sefer it's not really a shaila halacha l'maase. It's a pilpul. He corresponded with Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. That there's an idea that's developed by the Tesvei HaRosh in Brachas. The Gemara says that when a person performs a mitzvah, as David mentioned before, if a woman lights by us, it's so posh that you say a bracha when you light the candles, we call it the bench lift. You say a bracha over the candles. Really, Tesis has two opinions. One opinion of Tesis in Bamem Adlikin, the whole second parak in Masech HaShav is all about lift bench. So we call it lift bench, saying a bracha over Hadlokas on there. But one opinion of Tesis, you don't say a bracha when you light the candles. Lighting the candles is one of the many preparations that one does for Shabbos. You set the table, you vacuum the rug, you take a shower, you put up the cholin, and you light the candles. So why should you say a bracha on lighting the candles as opposed to putting up the cholin? One opinion is you don't say a bracha. We paskin that you do say a bracha, but the Gemara says when a person, let's say, puts on tefillin, a person puts on a talis, he does a mitzvah. Yeah. Even though he's supposed to recite the bracha is not miyakim here, take a pinch. So the Gemara has an expression that when a person performs a mitzvah and fails to recite the bracha, you can't say that he's not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. You can't say the bracha is ma'akev. The Gemara gives the logic. The bracha is only required by the Rabbanan. The mitzvah is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. So how can you say, logic dictates that the bracha, the Rabbanan, cannot be miyakev in the mitzvah deraisa. So the Tosfei HaRosh has a comment on that Gemara. It would appear from the Gemara that if you were to have a mitzvah where the bracha would be required min ha-Torah, then the bracha might be miyakev. So do we have such a mitzvah where the requirement to recite a bracha is min ha-Torah? So Rabbi Chana Basman points out Talmud Torah. When you're laying from a Sefer Torah, Brichas HaTorah, the Gemara seems to say, the Ramban, the Mishnah Berurah Paskens like this Ramban, Pasta based on the Shagasari, based on the Ramban, Brichas HaTorah is deraisa, for sure, either when you learn privately or at least when you learn Kriyas HaTorah. So then it should come out, let's say, when you learn Parsha Zohar. So there's a biblical obligation to learn Parsha Zohar from the Sefer Torah. There's a biblical requirement to recite a bracha. So would one say that you're not Yotze Parsha Zohar if you don't say a bracha? So there used to be a practice in Germany, now it became more popular. There's been a practice in Germany that on Shabbos Parsha Zohar, they would lane over Parsha Zohar in the afternoon before Mincha for the women who missed it in the morning. The women couldn't go to shul because they had little children, so they'd lane over Parsha Zohar. So this is a question whether women are mechuyev in Parsha Zohar or not. But when they would lane over Parsha Zohar, they wouldn't say a bracha. So the question is, if Parsha Zohar is a Kriyas HaTorah deraisa, whenever the Brichas HaTorah is required, whenever the bracha is needed, then you should say that you're not yet in the mitzvah if you didn't say a bracha. So then you gain nothing by reading over Parsha Zohar if you're not saying a bracha. So Rabbi Chana Wasserman wrote a whole correspondence with the Dvar Avraham about this topic. It's not really a shayla halacha l'maaseh. No one had a havamina that you should say a bracha on the Kriyas HaTorah. When you learn Parsha Zohar in the morning, as the maftir for the Parshas HaShavua, so you say a bracha. Relating at Mincha, just the Parshas Zohar alone, right before Mincha, you're not going to say a bracha. That's one of his famous stuff. So usually he has the name of the person, and he has tshuvas written to all the Rabbanim from this part of Lithuania. Anixta, Flanjan, and whatever, all of these cities. He corresponded with all the Rabbanim. Same thing, Rabitzel Panavisha. Yitzchak Rabinovich has also Sefer Zecher Yitzchak, a collection of tshuvas. There are many more, but it's a small collection of what they printed. So he has also tshuvas to all the rabbanim from these little villages. So there's one letter that he has, you can't really call it a tshuva. It's a letter in Divrei Torah. L'chvod ha'avrech, avrech means a young married man who's learning Torah. Sher Bisori, a relative of his, and he doesn't say who the name is. So when you read the letter that he writes, it's obvious that the letter was written to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. That was the father of Rav Soloveitchik from Boston. Because he's referring to a Dvar Torah that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik had published. He made it public, his Dvar Torah, and he develops, or Moshe Soloveitchik develops a klal based on a line in the Rambam, and then he has a problem with the Gemara, he has a difficulty. How did the Gemara fit in based on his rule from the Rambam? So the Dvar Avram writes in his letter, young man, that's not the way to learn. We make ideas and we develop ideas and learning based on Gemaras, and we have problems with Rambams. You have difficult Rambams. You don't develop a Yisoid based on a Rambam and say there's a difficult Gemara. So it's pretty obvious that that letter was written to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So he was the last rabbi in Kovna Nebuch before the one he died from disease in the Kovna Ghetto before they had a chance to kill him.
We'll see his grave.
Yeah. He used to go on vacation to Germany, to Potsdam, I think it's in Germany. Mm-hmm. So when Rabbi Soloveitchik was in Berlin in the university, he used to go to talk to him about learning, because that was a relative of his, and he had learned by Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Soloveitchik used to go talk, like he used to travel to Vilna to talk and learning with Rabbi Chaim Oizer. Many yeshiva men used to talk and learning with Rabbi Chaim Oizer, not just Rabbi Soloveitchik. So to Rabbi Soloveitchik used to go travel to Potsdam to talk and learning. He wanted, Rabbi Soloveitchik was single at that time. He had a single daughter, but it didn't work out. So he sent his daughter to Berlin to chase after Rabbi Soloveitchik. He wasn't interested. In the third volume of the Dvar Avram that was published after he passed away, he has a letter that he sent to Rav Chaim Oizer when the third volume of the Achiezer, the collection of Rav Chaim Oizer's tshuvas, came out. Rav Chaim Oizer has a tshuva where he writes about the gerus. A ger, a nochri who converts, has to be mekabel on mitzvah, has to accept upon himself to observe the mitzvah. So what do you do if you have a ger who doesn't really seem to really be accepting the mitzvah? You can't accept such a ger. So Rav Chaim Oizer has a difficult tshuva, where he applies a principle from the Gemara, Dvarm Shebalei Veinan Dvarm. If I say one thing, let's say the Gemara's case is, I sell you a house, and I didn't say what the background is. And then, the background is, I sold the house because I'm moving to Eretz Yisrael. There's a bacher learning in Slabodke, on the other side of the river, he should learn the Chavrusa every Matzoi Shabbos with Rav Naftali Amsterdam. So he used to learn Tzais together. So on one occasion, he mentioned to Rav Naftali that he needs an eitzer, a psychological eitzer. Sometimes he's very forgetful. So what can he do not to forget? So he said, what do you mean, for example, what do you forget? So he said, sometimes he forgets the daven mincha. So what he meant was that he gets so involved in learning, he forgets the daven mincha. So Rav Naftali was such a holy tzaddik, he couldn't imagine. Because a yeshiva bacher is going to forget the daven mincha. So he said, you probably mean you daven mincha, you forget to daven with a minyan. So he told the lie and he said, yeah, that's what I meant to say, but it's not true. So he felt very guilty about it. So he went and he told the altar from Slabodka that he told Rav Naftali a lie. So he told them to go to his home and confess to him that he told them a lie. So he walked for an hour. So she's explaining. So she Regina is explaining because the yeshiva was on the other side of the river.
On behind two rivers.
Two rivers.
Yes. He should go across the Vilia, go through Kovna, and to come over here to Alexdor. This is where Amsterdam was the road. And over there it's a synagogue to the right. The white building to the right, one close with the fence. It was the synagogue.
Where's the fence?
We can't really see it. We're not there yet.
It's the wrong building.
No, we can't see it anymore.
Oh, we're looking at the wrong
building. It's fine. It's from Slobodka to Alexot, it's far away.
Alexot or Alexot? How do you spell that?
Alexot.
You have to use... No,
you
have to check this.
No, you don't.
You spell Alexot, A-L-E-K-S-O.
Skochanan passed away in the year 1896. And within a year, the merchants who came from Russia... who respected him so much, who lived on the east side, they put together money, quarters and nickels and dimes, and they started a yeshiva in his memory, in his name. So there were two different yeshivas. One was Yeshiva Seitzkaim on the east side, that was named after Balozhin. Balozhin yeshiva was called Yeshiva Seitzkaim. And then there was Yeshiva Seitzkaim, and they joined them together, and then they moved to Washington Heights, they called it the Yeshiva College. Спасибо. Далее. Великий день.